Hey everyone, and welcome to our deep dive today. We're tackling a topic that's pretty crucial in the world of manufacturing, injection molding and material selection.
Yeah.
We're going to be using excerpts from an article called How Does Material Selection Affect Injection Molding Costs? Pretty self-explanatory title, right? But the article really gets into the nitty-gritty. It's amazing how choosing the wrong material can just completely tank your budget. And on the flip side, the right material can not only save you money, but also boost the quality and the performance of your products.
It's a game changer for sure. And it's not just about cost either. The material you choose influences everything, from how the mold is designed to how quickly you can produce parts, even what kind of post-processing is required.
Yeah, just skimming the article, I was blown away by the sheer variety of materials out there. It's kind of intimidating, to be honest.
It can be, yeah. It's like walking into a giant supermarket with aisles and aisles of options. But you have no idea what you need or what to choose.
Exactly. So where do you even begin? How do you start to narrow down the field?
Well, I always tell people, think of material selection as a series of trade-offs. Each material brings its own pros and cons. And understanding those is really the key to making smart choices.
So instead of just listing out a bunch of materials, let's talk about those decision points. What are some of the big questions someone should be asking themselves when they're trying to figure out what material is right for their project?
The first thing you need to consider are the functional requirements. What does your product actually need to DO? Does it need to be super strong, flexible, resistant to heat or chemicals?
Okay, so you're starting with the basics. Like, what are the absolute must-haves in terms of performance?
Exactly. Once you've identified those core needs, then you can start looking at specific materials and see which ones fit the bill.
Right. It's kind of like choosing the foundation of a house. You wouldn't build a skyscraper on a foundation meant for a bungalow, right? You need something that can handle the load.
That's a great analogy. It's about matching the material to the job. So let's say you need a material that can withstand impact. ABS is often a good choice for that. But it's important to consider the level of impact resistance you actually need.
Okay, so it's not just about knowing that ABS is tough, but understanding its limits.
Right, and comparing those limits to the specific demands of your project.
So would you say the same principle applies to other properties, like flexibility or temperature resistance?
Absolutely. Take polypropylene, for example. It's known for being flexible, often used in things like living hinges or snap fit components. But different grades of polypropylene will have varying degrees of flexibility.
Oh, interesting.
So choosing the wrong grade could mean your hinge is either too stiff or too flimsy, which obviously is not good.
Yeah, that could lead to product failure.
Exactly.
So even within a material family, there's a whole spectrum of options to consider.
It definitely adds another layer of complexity.
It does. So this is why it's so crucial to really have a crystal clear understanding of your project's specific requirements before you even start thinking about materials.
Couldn't agree more. You need to be able to articulate things like, what's the operating temperature range? How much load does it need to bear? What kind of chemical exposure will it encounter?
This really highlights the importance of collaboration between designers and engineers, right?
Absolutely. Having those open lines of communication to the very beginning of a project can prevent a lot of costly mistakes down the line.
Because it's much easier to make changes in the design phase than after you've already created molds and you're in the middle of production.
Exactly.
Speaking of production, I'm curious about how the volume of your production run impacts material choices. Does the quantity you're making really play a big role?
It's a huge factor, one that often gets overlooked, as the article mentions. Larger production runs unlock the benefits of economies of scale.
But wouldn't it make sense to always go for the highest quality material, regardless of volume? Wouldn't that just lead to a better product overall?
In theory, yes, but in practice, it's not always the most cost-effective approach, especially for smaller production runs.
Gotcha.
You see, certain materials might offer superior performance, but they come with a much higher price tag.
So it's a balancing act between desired properties, cost, and the scale of your production.
Exactly.
So how do you decide when to splurge on a premium material versus when to go with a more standard option?
One key factor is the lifespan of your product. If you're making something that needs to last for years, withstand a lot of wear and tear, then investing in a more durable material might be justified, even for smaller volumes.
Okay, that makes sense. Because a high-quality material could lead to fewer replacements, less waste over time.
Right.
But what if you're working on a product that has a shorter lifespan? Would it ever make sense to use a premium material in those cases?
It depends on the specific requirements and your target market. sometimes even for products with a shorter lifespan. Using a higher quality material can really enhance the user experience or elevate your brand perception.
Interesting.
So it's not always just about pure functionality. It can also be a way to differentiate your product, make it stand out in the market.
So we've talked about mechanical properties, production volume, even brand considerations. What other factors come into play when making these material decisions?
One aspect that people often underestimate is the impact of post-processing.
Oh, yeah.
The material you choose can significantly influence how much additional work is needed to achieve that final look and feel.
This is where those hidden costs can really start to sneak up on you, right?
Exactly. You might save money up front by choosing a cheaper material, but then end up spending way more time and resources on things like sanding, painting, or other treatments.
It's like those DIY projects that seem simple at first, but then you realize you need a bunch of specialized tools and materials, and it ends up costing way more than you expected.
It's a good analogy.
So what are some examples of materials that might require more extensive post-processing?
PLA is a common one. It's often used in 3D printing. It's relatively easy to print with. But PLA can have a rough surface finish, so you often need to sand it or do other treatments to get that smooth, polished look.
So if you're going for a high-end aesthetic, you got to factor in that extra time and labor.
Right.
What about a material that's known for requiring less post-processing?
ABS is generally a good choice. If you're looking for a smooth finish right out of the mold, it lends itself well to techniques like acetone smoothing, which can create a really glossy, almost glass-like surface.
This is making me realize that there are trade-offs at every stage of the process.
There are.
Even something as simple as achieving a smooth finish can have cost implications depending on the material you choose.
It's all interconnected.
And understanding those connections is key
to optimizing both cost and quality.
Before we move on, I want to circle back to something we touched on earlier, sustainability. The article we're using as a guide really emphasizes the financial benefits of using eco-friendly materials. I'm curious to dig a little deeper into that. Is it really possible to save money by going green?
Absolutely.
Because I think a lot of people assume that eco-friendly options are automatically more expensive.
That's a common misconception. While some sustainable materials might have a higher upfront cost, they often lead to significant savings over the product's life cycle.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Tell me more about how those long-term savings come into play.
One major factor is reduced waste.
Sustainable materials are often designed for recyclability or biodegradability, meaning they can be reused, or safely returned to the environment at the end of their life, which reduces disposal costs and the need for virgin materials.
So it's not just about minimizing the environmental impact, but also minimizing the financial impact.
Right.
What other cost-saving benefits do sustainable materials offer?
Energy efficiency is another key factor. Many sustainable materials require less energy to produce or process, which can translate to lower energy bills for manufacturers.
So it's like choosing energy-efficient appliances for your home. You might pay a bit more upfront, but you save money on your utility bills over time.
Exactly.
Can you give us an example of a sustainable material that offers those kinds of energy-saving benefits?
Recycled PT is a great example. It's commonly used in packaging and textiles. Studies have shown that using recycled PT can reduce energy consumption by up to 30% compared to virgin PT.
Wow, 30%. That's a significant reduction.
It is, both in terms of energy cost and carbon emissions.
So it really challenges that assumption that sustainable choices always come at a premium.
They don't. And with growing consumer demand for eco-friendly products, choosing sustainable materials can also give you a competitive edge.
So it's a win-win-win situation.
Yeah.
Better for the environment, better for your budget, and better for your brand image.
Exactly.
It seems like there are a lot of compelling reasons to prioritize sustainability in material selection.
There are.
This is making me rethink my whole approach to materials. It's not just about checking boxes on a spreadsheet. It's about understanding the broader implications of our choices.
That's a great takeaway.
Material selection is a powerful tool.
It is.
It can shape not only our products, but also our impact on the world.
Well said.
I'm feeling inspired to learn more about sustainable materials. But before we get too carried away, I think it's time to address another crucial aspect of injection molding. Waste. Even with the best intentions, some level of waste is inevitable in manufacturing.
You're absolutely right. Waste is a constant challenge.
In any production process.
And injection molding is no exception.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of waste management. What are the main types of waste we encounter in injection molding, and how do they impact the bottom line?
There are three main categories of waste to consider: material waste, energy waste, and time waste. Welcome back to our deep dive on injection molding material selection.
It's amazing how much there is to consider when choosing the right material for a project. And we just started talking about the three types of waste that can eat into your budget: material waste, energy waste, and time waste.
Indeed. And let's start by focusing on how your material choice directly impacts that first category, material waste. You might be surprised at just how much material can end up as scrap in the injection molding process, especially if you haven't optimized things.
This is where I think a lot of people just assume it's the cost of doing business, right? Like a little bit of wasted material here and there. But the article really opened my eyes to the hidden costs that can add up quickly.
You're absolutely right. It's easy to overlook those seemingly small amounts of waste. But when you factor in the cost of the raw material itself, the disposal fees, and the potential for production delays, those losses start to become significant.
So what can be done to minimize material waste from the get-go? I'm imagining it starts with smart design choices.
Exactly. The design phase is where you can have the biggest impact on material efficiency. Using advanced CAD techniques, designers can optimize part geometry to use only the material absolutely necessary for strength and functionality while minimizing excess.
So it's about being mindful of material usage right from the drawing board.
Precisely. A well-designed part will not only perform its intended function, but also minimize material consumption during production.
Are there specific design considerations that can help reduce waste?
Absolutely. One strategy is to minimize wall thickness wherever possible without compromising structural integrity. Thinner walls mean less material usage, which translates to less waste.
That makes sense. It's about finding that sweet spot between strength and material efficiency. What other design tricks can help?
Another technique is to incorporate features like ribs or gussets to add strength to a part without increasing overall wall thickness. These features act like internal supports, allowing you to use less material while maintaining structural integrity.
So it's about working smarter, not harder, right? Using design elements that maximize strength while minimizing material usage.
Exactly. And these days, there's sophisticated software that can help designers simulate different scenarios and optimize their designs for minimal waste.
It sounds like technology is really playing a key role in making injection molding more efficient and sustainable. But even with the best design, some level of waste is inevitable, right? What happens to those excess materials?
That's where things can get interesting. Instead of simply discarding those scraps, many manufacturers are embracing recycling as a way to reduce costs and minimize their environmental footprint.
We touched on recycling earlier, but I'd love to dig a little deeper. What types of materials are commonly recycled in injection molding?
Many thermoplastics, like ABS, polyethylene, and polypropylene, can be reground and reused in the injection molding process. This reduces the need for virgin materials and cuts down on disposal costs.
So it's like creating a closed-loop system where those excess materials are given a second life. Are there any limitations to using recycled materials?
There can be, depending on the specific material and the application. For example, recycled materials might not always have the same level of purity or consistency as virgin materials, which could impact properties like color or strength.
So it's a trade-off, right? You gain the environmental and cost benefits of using recycled materials, but you might have to make some adjustments to your process or product design to accommodate those variations.
Exactly. It's about finding the right balance for your specific needs. And it's worth noting that the quality of recycled materials is constantly improving as technology advances. So those limitations are becoming less and less of a concern.
That's encouraging to hear. It seems like recycling is becoming an increasingly viable option for injection molding. Now, let's shift gears and talk about energy waste. How does material choice impact energy consumption during production?
This is where things get really interesting. Different materials have different thermal properties, which means they require different amounts of energy to melt and mold.
So some materials are more energy intensive than others. Does that mean choosing the right material can actually lower your energy bills?
Absolutely. For example, materials with lower melting temperatures require less energy to process, which translates to reduced energy consumption and lower costs.
So it's like choosing energy efficient appliances for your home. You might pay a bit more upfront, but you save money on your utility bills over time.
That's a great analogy. And it's not just about melting temperature. Some materials have better thermal conductivity, meaning they transfer heat more efficiently, which can lead to faster cycle times and reduced energy usage.
Faster cycle times mean more parts produced in less time, right? That's a win for both productivity and efficiency.
Exactly. So by choosing materials with favorable thermal properties, you can not only reduce energy consumption, but also boost your production output.
This is making me realize that there's a ripple effect to every decision we make in injection molding. Material choice impacts energy usage, cycle times, waste generation, and ultimately the overall cost and sustainability of the operation.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's all interconnected. And by taking a holistic view, we can make choices that optimize both the economic and environmental aspects of our process.
Speaking of interconnectedness, we haven't yet talked about time waste. How does material choice factor into that aspect of efficiency?
Time waste can be a sneaky culprit in injection molding. It can manifest in various ways, from longer cooling times to more frequent mold cleaning to troubleshooting issues caused by incompatible materials.
So material choice can indirectly lead to those production delays and hiccups that eat away at efficiency?
Precisely. For example, if you choose a material that's prone to warping or shrinkage, you might encounter problems with part quality and dimensional accuracy, leading to rework or even scrap.
That sounds like a real headache. So it's not just about choosing a material that meets the basic functional requirements, but also considering how it will behave during the entire molding process.
Exactly. It's about anticipating potential challenges and choosing materials that will minimize the risk of delays and production downtime.
Are there any specific material properties that can help reduce time waste?
One important factor is mold release, which refers to how easily the molded part separates from the mold. Materials with good mold release properties reduce the risk of sticking and ensure smooth ejection, leading to faster cycle times and less downtime.
It's like choosing a non-stick pan for cooking. You want those pancakes to slide right out.
That's a great way to put it. And just like with non-stick cookware, there are various coatings and additives that can improve mold release and speed up production.
So it's about understanding the nuances of each material and choosing the one that's best suited for the specific application and process. Are there other material characteristics that can impact production time?
Another important consideration is viscosity, which refers to the material's resistance to flow. Materials with lower viscosity flow more easily into the mold, which can lead to faster filling times and reduced cycle times.
So it's like choosing the right oil for your car engine. You want something that flows smoothly and efficiently.
Precisely. And just like with engine oil, the viscosity of a polymer can be influenced by factors like temperature and pressure. So it's crucial to understand those dynamics to optimize your process.
This is fascinating. It's amazing how seemingly small details like mold release or viscosity can have a significant impact on overall production time and efficiency.
It's all about understanding the interconnectedness of the process and making choices that support a smooth and efficient workflow.
Before we move on to our final part, I want to touch on one more aspect of material selection that's becoming increasingly important: sustainability. Earlier, we talked about how eco-friendly materials can lead to cost savings through reduced waste and energy consumption. But I'm wondering if there are other benefits beyond those direct financial gains.
Absolutely. Choosing sustainable materials goes beyond just dollars and cents. It's about aligning your business practices with a more responsible and forward-thinking approach to manufacturing.
I completely agree. It's about recognizing the environmental impact of our choices and taking steps to minimize that impact. How does that translate to tangible benefits for businesses?
For starters, it can enhance your brand reputation. Consumers are becoming more and more conscious of the environmental impact of their purchases, and they're increasingly choosing brands that align with their values.
So sustainability is becoming a key differentiator in the market. Companies that prioritize eco-friendly practices are more likely to attract environmentally conscious customers.
Exactly. And it goes beyond just attracting customers. It can also attract talent. Top-tier employees, especially younger generations, are increasingly drawn to companies that are committed to sustainability and social responsibility.
That makes sense. People want to work for organizations that are making a positive impact on the world.
And it's not just about reputation and talent. Sustainable practices can also lead to regulatory advantages. Governments around the world are implementing stricter environmental regulations, and companies that are ahead of the curve are better positioned to comply and avoid penalties.
So there are legal and financial incentives to embrace sustainability as well. It seems like there's a strong business case for making eco-friendly choices in addition to the ethical imperative.
Absolutely. Sustainability is no longer just a nice to have. It's becoming a must have for businesses that want to thrive in the long term.
Well, this conversation has really opened my eyes to the multifaceted nature of material selection. It's not just about finding the cheapest or the strongest material, but about understanding the complex interplay of factors that contribute to a successful and sustainable operation.
It's a journey of continuous learning and improvement. As the field of material science advances and new innovations emerge, there will always be new opportunities to optimize our processes and make more responsible choices.
Well said. I'm feeling inspired to continue exploring these possibilities, but for now, I think we need to take a break and regroup. When we come back, let's delve into some specific strategies for reducing waste and optimizing injection molding operations. What do you say?
Sounds like a plan. See you in part three.
All right, we're back. Ready to dive into some solutions for tackling waste in injection molding?
Absolutely. Let's get practical.
So we talked about smart design for minimizing material use up front, but are there specific design techniques that can help reduce waste during production?
Definitely. One common culprit is something called short shots. You know when the molten plastic doesn't completely fill the mold cavity?
Oh yeah, I've seen that happen.
It can be caused by a few things, like insufficient injection pressure, or improper venting of the mold.
So it's like trying to make waffles, but the iron isn't hot enough.
Exactly. You end up with a half-baked mess.
And wasted batter.
And wasted plastic in our case.
Yeah.
So design modifications can help prevent that.
Like what kinds of modifications?
Strategically placed vents.
Yeah.
Or a more streamlined flow path.
So the plastic flows smoothly and fills the mold completely.
Exactly.
It's amazing how these small tweaks can make a big difference.
They can.
But even with perfect design, there's always going to be some excess material.
That's true.
What's the best way to manage those scraps?
Well, in-house recycling is becoming increasingly popular. Many facilities are investing in equipment to grind up their plastic scraps and then reuse that material in the production process.
So it's like a mini circular economy within your own facility?
Exactly. You're closing the loop,
right. Reducing
waste, and the lowering demand for virgin materials.
Are there any limitations to what kinds of plastics can be recycled this way?
Some are easier than others. Thermoplastics like polyethylene and polypropylene, they can be melted and remolded multiple times without much degradation.
But thermosets are a different story.
Right. Thermosets undergo a chemical change during molding, so they're much harder to recycle.
Gotcha. So if you're aiming for a closed loop system, you got to choose those recyclable thermoplastics.
Yeah, and it's worth noting, the quality of recycled plastic can vary. It depends on things like contamination and how many times it's been reprocessed.
So you need to be careful about the source of your recycled material.
Absolutely. Work with reputable suppliers who can guarantee the quality.
This is reminding me that recycling isn't just a simple solution. It's a whole process that needs to be managed carefully.
Right. From collection and sorting to ensuring the right quality for the application.
Now let's talk about energy waste. We already touched on choosing materials with lower melting temperatures. But what else can be done to maximize energy efficiency?
Well, one often overlooked area is the efficiency of the molding machine itself. Older machines can be real energy guzzlers, but newer models have energy-saving features.
It's like upgrading from that old clunker car to a hybrid.
Exactly. You might pay more upfront, but you'll save money on fuel in the long run.
Or energy in this case.
Right, and just like with a car, regular maintenance is key.
Keep everything running smoothly.
Clean, lubricated, properly calibrated, it all makes a difference.
What about alternative heating technologies? Are there any new innovations in that area?
Definitely. Traditional injection molding machines use electric heaters. But there are newer technologies like induction heating, which can be more efficient and provide better temperature control.
So it's about staying informed about those advancements.
Absolutely. And remember, energy efficiency isn't just about cost savings. It's also about reducing our environmental impact.
Right. Less energy use means a smaller carbon footprint.
Exactly.
Okay. Last but not least, time waste.
Yes. The silent killer of productivity.
We talked about material choices that can lead to delays, but are there other ways to keep things running smoothly?
A strong preventive maintenance program is crucial.
Catch those potential problems before they cause downtime.
Exactly. And preventive maintenance isn't just about preventing breakdowns. It's about ensuring the machines are performing at their best, which means higher quality parts and ultimately less wasted time.
So it's a proactive approach to keeping things running smoothly.
Right.
Any other time-saving tips?
Process optimization is key. Look at your entire workflow. Identify bottlenecks. See where you can make improvements.
Sometimes it's just a matter of rearranging your workspace.
Sometimes it's more complex. but even small changes can add up to big-time savings.
This has been an incredible deep dive. We've covered so much, from choosing the right material to smart design, recycling, energy efficiency, even preventive maintenance.
It's all connected.
And it all comes back to making smart decisions that benefit both your bottom line and the environment.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up, if there's one thing I want our listeners to take away, it's that material selection is a strategic decision. It has ripple effects throughout the entire process.
From sourcing to production to disposal.
It's about thinking holistically.
And making choices that are sustainable in the long run.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into injection molding.
It's been a pleasure.
Remember, the world of manufacturing is always changing. So stay curious, keep learning, and until next time, happy molding.